back, everybody. Another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 269, coming at you on a Wednesday night, right after, just minutes ago, we wrapped up the first 11 rounds of the 2026 Meatball Draft, the 2026 NFBC Draft Champions Draft. For those keeping track at home, it was a doozy. We're here to recap our picks and more. But first off, you can find me on Twitter at BDIntric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom, and my co-host and draft villain. I'm just kidding. As always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ, Ryan Bloomfield. How are we doing, my friend?
Doing great. Back on that. Good. Scratch the itch tonight.
Ooh, man,
felt good to be back in the
endorphin rush that was taking place.
Every year while we're in, because we're all on a Zoom call, all 15 of us, 16, 17 of us tonight. It's like, should we do a couple more rounds? No. I want to. No. We ended up stopping at 11. Many highlights that we'll cover draft-wise this evening. Many laughs among the group. Thank you to Rob DiPietro for organizing this event for the fourth year. I think, though, for me, the highlight of the night was, Bubba, just watching you on the Zoom, fiddling around with God knows how many pieces of paper you printed out for this damn thing. It was a sight to behold.
Well, if you want to know,
how many trees did we kill?
Quite a few.
Oh my God! Look at that.
I did front and back too, so I saved some trees at the same time.
You were gonna write notes and stuff for the show, but I was looking at you and like, there's no way this guy is even. He got his pages mixed up halfway through. It was
hilarious. I felt like Raj. Felt like Raj trying to do an auction draft. It was an eventful situation.
You had some solicitations some solicitors at the door during the draft while you're trying to make a pick.
Yeah, so. I was on the clock and some little kid knocks on or rings the doorbell to get my dog fired up. It was just a whole deal, which was great. Still happy with how things turned out, but I turned out an old man get off my lawn real quick in that scenario. So that's what it is. But overall, great time as always. Can't wait to kick up that draft again and many more slow drafts as we get going here soon enough around postseason time. And we're here to talk this draft, though. 11 rounds, Ryan, for those that are new to the format, draft champions, 50-round draft and hold that you draft it all at once. And then you set your rosters. If you're in a DC, you look at your rosters this time of year, and it's a lot of red for injuries and whatnot. So you come to expect that. But first thoughts, Ryan. First thoughts out the gate before we talk positions and other things, and we'll pick our teams apart at the end, but just first thoughts, overall thoughts on how you did.
This was, I don't know, for me, this is a typical Bloom team, like old, boring, reliable, hopefully reliable. And for as much as I like to draft my old teams or whatever, even in fab leagues in draft and holds, especially with draft and holds, 8 months before the season begins, I go even more into my shell. So as we'll talk about with our own teams, we'll break down probably each other's teams at the end, or really throughout. This was vintage Bloomfield. Just again, not a good thing, but this is old, reliable.
Second place right now.
This is a team I would draft. And these are players who absolutely fit the mold. Like, I don't think I took anyone under 28. 29, something like that. We'll see. Yeah.
You can drive it. You can barely drive in a school zone, so that's good. For me, I guess it's a Bubba team. I paid attention to Whitmore. Even Rob mentioned that on the show.
Yeah,
that I much more cognizant of Whip. Maybe not on purpose, but it worked out pretty well. Got a surprise pick for you that we will talk about shortly. Early on, took a little bit of a gamble here and there, but for the most part, it's a lot of Bubba guys. A lot of Bubba guys. At least early on, especially, but then we scattered them around towards the end. So I like it a lot, honestly. Again, we'll pick our teams apart. We'll pick each other's teams apart, I guess. But I like that I covered most of the categories pretty well, I think, for 11 rounds. And that's all I could hope for, leaving the first 11 rounds. And we'll see. It feels a lot better than last year's draft. Let's put it that way.
Did you not like last year's? I don't remember.
I did and I didn't. Like, the Royce Lewis pick haunted me forever. Like, I liked it, but I was like, oh, this is going to turn. Like, it's going to be really good or really bad.
It is funny how one pick, you can make one bad pick, at least in your own brain. And I know for me, when I'm in the draft room or drafting live, like, that sticks with me. It sticks in my craw, even as I'm making my other pick. So, like, one pick that you don't feel is that great can kind of drag down the perception of your team. At least that happens to me all the time.
Yeah, and as Uncle Ted said, I took Tyler Fitzgerald with my 11th pick this year. I took a much, to me, better 11th pick, unless he has Tommy John surgery in the next couple months. So I like my chances in that situation. But let's talk about a few things. We're going to go starting pitching was quite the scene. If you want to bring the board up, Ryan, we can start going off the board if you're ready for that.
Yeah, it
was mentioned in our Discord asking questions about starting pitching. It was kind of the normal. Big dogs went early. Not one starting pitcher in round two at all, period, which was quite a surprise. And then the floodgates opened, Ryan. So what did you notice when this took place? Because you didn't take your first SP till round five. My first SP was round four, and it might be a gamble at this point in time.
I would agree with that. The starting pitching, yeah, it was interesting to me. The room was a little bit more aggressive on starting pitching than I expected. Again, at least this early, traditionally, we're just so far where there's just so much time for these pitchers to get hurt that I thought we would be waiting until like a fourth, fifth round pitcher run. What we saw tonight was three starting pitchers in the first round. Tarik Skubal went six to Mike Mager. Jenny Butler took Paul Skeens 13th, and Dan Kenyon took Garrett Crochet 14th. I feel like Zach Wheeler would have been in that mix had he not been injured recently. Nobody went in the second round. So that was no starting pitchers, no pitchers at all went in the second round. So that was kind of on brand with what I was expecting. And then the pitcher run. Absolutely. We all know it's coming. It's just a matter of when. The third round of this league, there were seven starters taken, and really seven starters in a span of nine picks. It was Chris Sale, yep, Logan Gilbert, Joe Ryan, Hunter Brown, Yamamoto, Christopher Sanchez, and Jacob DeGrom all went in really the first two-thirds of the third round. And then, dude, the fourth round, there was 10 pitchers taken. Some of those were relievers. We'll talk about relievers, but that's when we started to get the reliever run in there. But there were 10 pitchers taken in the fourth round. So that was kind of classic to what we would see in a typical NFBC draft and a draft and hold. It's just, to me, I thought the pitching run would be a round or two later than it actually was.
Yeah, no, it got going early and often. I think it's a combination of two things that I know you and Ben talked about on the Patreon show, but it feels like there's only a couple like elite options, and then it's just a gigantic mess of like, do you trust DeGrom, who's already getting a start pushed back because of his shoulder? Is Christopher Sanchez the real deal? Yamamoto, mm-hmm, there's a million questions with Yamamoto. Hunter Brown, legit dirt. Like, if you look at Underdog on Twitter, just kidding, that doesn't exist. There's just a lot of questions with the next crew of pitchers. Like Chris Sale, he's still rehabbing. What's that look like when he comes back next season? The list goes on and on in that regard. So there's a ton of pitchers, and it even followed into the next round because, like, Hunter Green's coming back from injury, looked great. Dylan Cease, we've talked about him a ton. The good, the bad, the ugly there. Brian Wu, Blake Snell. I went and took Zach Wheeler with my first pitcher in round four. I was like, hey, he got the blood clot removed. He's going to rehab. They said, you know, thanks, Mark, in the chat there. In reality, like they said, it's a one to 3 months of blood thinner usually. And these like real doctors that have been putting stuff out on this, not Twitter doctors. And even if it's 3 months on paper, that means he's fine come regular season. Now, there's a lot of what ifs, sure, but this is a guy that if this blood clot never takes place, he's around two easily in this area. Take the chance.
If not first round.
And I backed it up, and we'll talk about that later on. But I'll take the chance with Wheeler in round four. But, yeah, just to your point, and like even if you go deeper into the starting pitching pool, it's every round is like looking at, okay, do I take this guy at the starting pitcher or do I go get another bat? Because it was very intriguing in that situation.
Necessary evil, though. I mean, it's and we've talked about this all the time in draft seasons. Like, yeah, I don't want to take a bunch of starting pitchers, but I think the response to that plan is not don't take starting pitchers. You have, if anything, to me, it's lean into the volume of starting pitchers and just give yourself as many dart throws. Yeah, a couple are going to go down, and how many do you have left standing? So that factored into my approach. Like you said, I waited until the fifth round to take my first starting pitcher. Rob DiPietro did something similar. He waited till the fourth round, end of the fourth round. I pick right next to Rob. I don't know if we said this at the top. I picked second and you picked 12th. So it was nice that we were far apart from each other. We could actually kind of do a little side chat and talk through this. Other Jacob Hallisker did not take a pitcher until the sixth round. Bubba, you took Wheeler in the fourth. Everyone else kind of had two or three starting pitchers through the first five rounds. Again, pretty classic for NFBC. And what we always say is, it's whatever the players are, the order that can change your fortunes rather wildly.
I think another point that you're to add on to a point you're making about like leaning into it, it's like if we think this is murky, just wait for the next 10 rounds and then 10 rounds after that. It's just going to get worse and worse. So it's like you said, lean into at least some of the known, I guess, is the way I'll mm-hmm. phrase. Like, we know the skill sets of these guys. There's still what ifs, like we mentioned, but the what ifs might not be nearly as bad as someone going in round 22 or something like that. So, like, take your volume now, because in a DC, we're still, you know, it's 50 rounds. You're still looking at 23 pitchers. That's always a debate, like, how many do you take? Let's just say off the top of 23 pitchers. Is it, you know, 12, 13 starters or like 14? So like, how do you break it down? It's a whole other. We did a show on that before last season. We'll probably do another one this year about breaking down DCs, but it's just, it just gets murkier and murkier as you go. So, you know, some guys will lean into different, you know, hitting positions because they're not great. So you want to dominate them. To me, it felt like as much of a mess as pitching was, and people that listen to the show know I am not an early pitching guy at all, but I kept telling myself, especially with the Wheeler pick, that could be risky. It's like, yeah, let's take some more picks. And I took risky picks after that as well. But we'll see where that goes.
No, you're right. It did get murky. I mean, Ben Tidd was in the chat with us as well. And he was saying like, yeah, like as we were getting into this last round, this 11th round, it's like, yeah, starting pitching starting to get really like, again, a lot of these may work out, might not. But guys like Zebby Matthews, Hurston Waldrip, who you took, Gavin Williams, Kyle Bradish, like that was the kind of my Luis Castillo, again, boring on brand, but like that's the kind of pitcher you're looking at in the 11th, and you can really set yourself back by waiting that far. So
all I know is Ryan Venancio got a steal in round 10 with Jack Flaherty, so that was a big one right there. You got to run with that when you can. Before we go any farther, Ryan, I should have asked you this at the beginning because I wanted to bring it up during the live stream, but I didn't want to bring it up during the live stream at the same time. And Phil Dussault kind of mentioned it, and we can talk about this because Rob will put the stream out as a podcast, so it's not like it's hidden. He mentioned he was going to punt saves. I was debating punting saves. The reason I say this is there's no overall in this one because of other factors involved. So without it being an overall, like we've seen time and time again, heck, we've seen guys in the overalls basically limit saves and still do very well if you crush the other categories. So that was one of those with already the questions of what closers are good right now for 2026 and no overall. Like I still went and got a Trevor McGill, who I thought in round six was great. Probably wouldn't have been round six if it was an overall. But what were your thoughts going in? Were you trying to punt any positions, or was that a thought for you at all?
It was a thought, especially because this is a standalone league. It was interesting. I heard Phil Dussault say that as well in the, he did end up taking David Bednar with the sixth pick. Maybe 5 minutes before Bednar blew the
sixth round pick.
Yeah, sixth round, not sixth overall, of course. Minutes before Bednar blew the save tonight, I guess, on Wednesday night, but whatever. Phil did say he was thinking about punting saves, but just couldn't pass up David Bednar in the sixth round. The thought entered my head as well, especially as I talked about with Ben on our bonus episode earlier this week. It's like the closer pool is just, I don't feel that confident after eight or nine, maybe eight closers. And there are 15 teams in this draft. So it's like 50% chance you get a closer that you're not confident in, or you just don't take one in these first 11 rounds. So that entered my head. You could also do things like, and I don't know if certain teams have done this. I haven't, again, we just got out of the draft room, so I have not really analyzed other people's teams, but you can certainly punt batting average, punt steals. I'd like to take a deeper look at some of these other builds and see if anybody did some kind of crazier strategies, because you can do that in these standalone leagues where more, at least in the NFBC, more of this money stays in the league because a whole bunch of it doesn't go to the overall competition.
Yep, totally agree. So I want to check on that. I guess a perk to taking closers early, if quote unquote they are the elite closers, you're going to get good ratios and strikeouts, which will help compared to some other starting pitchers later on down the road. But yes, it does change things up a bit.
Yeah.
Let's talk catchers because this is Bubba in the Bloom. So let's get after it. The first catcher, Kyle Raleigh, went to Ryan Roof in round two with the seventh pick of round two. I took King William as the second catcher off the board in round three. And then it got quiet until Bengaliers went to DiPietro. And the Goose was the fifth catcher off the board. So I'm going to stop there because that made me – that just brought like a tear to my eye after I planted that flag at when he was called up, and it's been pretty sweet since then. What were your thoughts on the catching run? Because you you went and took Will Smith, which you guys all know my thoughts there. But I'll be honest, where you took him is fine. I'm not going to be opposed to that.
Yep.
But what are your thoughts here? Because there's quite a few catchers that went off the board.
Quite a few catchers that went off the board. And even in the 11, 10, 9, 8, even in the eighth round, Yiner Diaz and Hunter Goodman went. So, like, I thought the catcher pool was rather deep in this draft and thus should be probably pretty deep, at least for your catcher one. Let's see how bad that second half of the catcher pool is when we restart this in October. But I thought really in almost any round, like, I would have considered Raleigh in the second. I actually did consider William Contreras in the third round. I thought Langoliers and the Goose in the fifth round were fine picks. And I, like you said, I ultimately landed on Will Smith with the almost last pick in the sixth round, which I was happy with. I saw you smirk when I made the pick, of course, but I half made it just to, I don't even know if piss you off is the right word.
Why would you get pissed?
But you just kind of laughed at it. So that was on brand. But right after Will Smith was, I was thinking about Salvador Perez, Ben Rice, those guys in draft and holds, those are catcher first base eligible guys. And we mentioned this in the Zoom and during the draft is like in the second half of these seasons, draft and hold catchers that qualified other positions, first base. I'm using Wilson Contreras at corner infield in some draft and holds right now. I'm using him at utility on another team. It's actually kind of nice to be able to do that. So I thought the catcher pool was pretty robust, at least the first half of it.
Yeah, the interesting one, and we'll have to, we'll find out more as the season goes on and early into the offseason research. Adley Rutschman went in round nine, and Basalo went the following round, I believe, or there's two rounds later.
11,
and so, I think. 11th round. So that'll be interesting to see how that shakes out with the Orioles as the rest of the season goes on and into 2026. So a lot of catchers. We were texting about it, like Goodman and Yiner falling into round eight was pretty interesting to me because of what they've done this season. So lots of, to me, and I'm always biased on this regards, but lots of really good catchers available, like you said, especially catcher ones. It's a good point to clarify there. But just for fun, I'm pulling up just like the player rater for catchers to see who's even still available. And you got JTR, your boy's out there.
JTR was out there. I've got my Dylan Dingler, up here.
Who I like a lot.
Dylan Dingler. Austin Detroit. Wells, Ohapi, Jeffers. Yep. So I don't know. Drake Baldwin.
It's starting to
thin out a little bit. Scott Burks in the chat says six teams went without a catcher. There was also two teams that took two catchers. So Dom Rello took Drake Baldwin and Samuel Basayo, and John Fish took Yiner Diaz and Adley Rutschman. And we've mentioned this before,
DiPietro has two also.
Oh, does he? Oh, yeah. Rob took Shea Langoliers and Ben Rice. So three sharp players took two catchers in the first 10 rounds or the first 11 rounds. And in a draft and hold, that can save you a roster spot later. You only kind of need three catchers if you want to go that route later on.
Yep, definitely. So something else to keep in our back pockets as draft season is not that far away, folks. Hopefully, like a month and a half.
Oh, it's here. 2 months. It is now draft season.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but I like Rob said it in the thing. I'm like, I'm waiting for three slow drafts on my phone at one time and just, getting that ping, you're on deck. Oh, that's going to be so great. Like, yes, crack to the fantasy soul. All right. Second base position. Dom talked about this. Dom and James Anderson did a preview podcast for RotoWire earlier on Wednesday, and they mentioned the second base cesspool. And I'm kind of torn on this. Like, I understand there's not a lot of elite second base talent, but I was like, as the draft went on, I'm like, there's a lot of second basemen I have zero problem drafting right now. And that's kind of where it felt weird. It's like, top 8-9 rounds, sure, I get it. After that, you saw five, six of them go in the last two rounds. So I think it's a very interesting position if you plan accordingly.
Yes, agreed. I think it's similar to last year so far, where like the top end second base is rough. So we did have Ketel Marte go in the second round. We had Jazz Chisholm go in the second round. Jazz qualifies at second and third. But Rob D took Jazz in the second and Mike Mager took Ketel Marte. After that was Jose Altuve in the fifth round. And that was pretty much it for second base until later, where 9th through 11th round, there were a bunch. And this kind of maybe goes to what you were saying, Bubba, as it kind of feels like there's a pretty solid midsection to second base. Like Bryce Harang, Luke Kuechel, Jackson Holliday, Lenin Soso qualifies there. They all went near the end. I also had guys like, did Nico Hoerner get picked?
Nico didn't get picked. He was near Semien. The top of my list. Semien's out there.
Brandon Lau. So like there were others. Gleyber Torres. Did Gleyber go?
He did. He did not go. Like, but Bryson Stott, Luis Garcia, Brendan Donovan.
Yeah. So like I actually think like I don't know. At the top end second base is a cesspool, especially if you play Jazz at third base. Like there's just not much there. But it felt like we could leave this first 11 rounds without a second baseman, and we both did that. And I think we're gonna be fine there.
And I'll be honest, like I was really close to taking Jackson Holliday, and then Kenyon took him two picks ahead of me. It's like, okay, that makes that easier. I had Altuve circled, and that did not even come close to coming back to me. So that's fine. But after Altuve, I was definitely just sitting there going, okay, we're going to wait for a while and see where this one goes. It was interesting to see Bryce Turang. I was wondering how far he would fall, because if you look at player raters, he's the number one second baseman on the player raters, and he overall rates out pretty high. But yeah, if you go on the Fangraphs player rater, Bryce Turang is number one at the position. He's returning a $22.60 value. Mikel Garcia, who's not second base next year, is returning $22. Jose Altuve, $21.20. Marte, $19.20. So Turang's leading the way right now, which is pretty impressive. Anything else at second base? Because that just seemed like one of the things. Like first base was kind of another murky one that was discussed. A lot of people went first base early, not much later on into like the last couple rounds, I guess. But where are we at on that one?
Yeah, I wasn't really tracking first base. It did not seem like there were a bunch of good options for me. I did not end up taking a first baseman at all. So I didn't go first and second. I took two shortstops and a third baseman, but did not take first base at all. You took Vinny P in the fifth round, right after Josh Naylor, but earlier in that round, Matt Olson went, and then kind of later in the following round, Rob D took Wilson Contreras. So felt like Vinny P maybe a little aggressive, but I like the pick. I thought in the fifth round that's a shot worth taking.
Yeah. When we break down our teams, I'll explain my thought process there, because okay. I had him circled for a couple reasons, and I'm glad it worked. That's why I said, and you know, that's the old adage, like when you leave a draft, you should always feel pretty good about yourself. We only did 11 rounds, so you should feel really good about yourself, probably. I the way it all came together, I'm pretty pumped on. We'll see how that goes, but pretty happy with it so far. Let's talk some surprising picks that you took notes on, and I agree with these, and if I find any more, I will bring them up, but I'm going to let you lead the way, because the one in all caps out the gate belongs to me.
Yeah, you made a splash. And just want to get ahead of it, little disclaimer, what we mean by surprise picks. It does not mean we think it's a bad pick. And even if we thought it was a bad pick, who are we to say that it is actually a bad pick? This is an extremely sharp room. And so just want to throw that out there. This is more just kind of names that I took stock of, that we kind of mentioned to each other in our little side chat, that it's just every new season, there's names in certain rounds where I'm like, okay, I need to start to get used to that. So yeah, the all caps name was yours, Junior Caminero. We'll talk about that a little bit later once we talk about your team. Kyle Schwarber went in the first round in this. If Kyle Schwarber repeats what he did this season, that totally makes sense. It's weird seeing Kyle Schwarber in the first round, but again, just need to adapt to that because he's having a monster year. We'll go back and forth on this one. Nick Kurtz was probably one of the players most, I don't know, debated, but most like, I wonder where he's going to go in the meatball draft. Nick Kurtz went in the, was the second pick of the second round. Dan Kenyon took Nick Kurtz right after Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Do you think that's a spot where Kurtz is probably going to end up once we eventually get to the end of this season?
I think it's close. Like, tell, like, let's spot the difference between Kurtz and Pete Alonso. Like, that's where you're comparing the situation there. So, like, it's fair. It's right after Vlad. We talked, like, people were talking about the first base situation. Ryan Roof, who took Kyle Schwarber with the his first pick in 1.9, he said it was between Kurtz and Schwarber. He almost took Kurtz instead. So Kurtz could have been the ninth overall pick, which would have been really surprising.
Again, made some waves. Yep.
Yeah, but as much as he's balling out, is it wrong? Maybe not. So. Right. We're drafting so early, a lot of stuff gets wild here. But yeah, the Kurtz pick, that was one where when it came up, I was like, huh. And then I'm like, yeah, okay. Like, I kind of get it at the same time. If he hits 280 plus, and they're going to be playing in Sacramento again next year, like, is 45, 50 home runs out of the question for Nick Kurtz next year? Like, I know that sounds crazy, but.
He's doing it right now. Like,
it's a better Pete Alonso right there.
Yeah. So I'd probably Domrello took Pete Alonso near the end of the second round. I'd probably still go Alonso, but again, that's me just being an old.
And that's real quick, you know, it was surprising to me at first base.
Bryce Harper.
Almost the end of round three. Because I was looking at taking him. I'm like, oh, he's boring, but it's Bryce. You know what you're gonna get. Thank God Craig Martin took him so I could take William Contreras right after him, because I was looking at first base options and it gets nasty. And I wanted Vinny P, but did I want to play chicken with that one? And then the decision was made for me not to take Bryce Harper. But him falling to later round three, which is, again, watching where this took place, makes sense. It's just, it's been a long time since we've seen that.
And you were in a first base sandwich. Are we not gonna talk about the other first baseman on the other side of you in the third round, who you said you were considering? I don't know how earnest you were in that, but yeah, Freddie Freeman went to Jenny Butler with pick 43, so near the end of the third round, which felt right. Real quick, first base was Vlad, Kurtz, Alonso, Devers, assuming he qualifies there, Harper, Freddie Freeman, and then a gap after that, and then you went Vinny. So I swore to myself that I would not take Freddie Freeman in this draft. I still think the 2-3 turn for Freddie would have been a little aggressive, but I like where Freddie went in this one. Just interesting to see Bryce Harper, Freddie Freeman next to each other in the third round as a potential new reality.
Yeah, that was my biggest takeaway. And I was like, whoa. And then it got some other names here. O'Neill Cruz to the two-time champion. Steve Weimer, the final pick of round two, pick 30, O'Neill Cruz. So the O-zone went Ohtani, O'Neill Cruz, which was fitting there. So that was a surprise pick because I didn't know where O'Neill Cruz would go. Like, you either love him or you hate him, it feels like. Dude can steal a ton of bags. He's got crazy power. Is he going to play? There's a million questions. When he's on the field playing well, he's a beast. So that went. Then Neto, right before he's got his hand knocked off, he went not early. I don't think is the correct word there. I'm great with terminology tonight. But he did go in the middle of round two to Ryan Venancio. So I'll stop there. What are your thoughts on the Cruz Neto picks? Because Neto was a question in the Discord, like, where do you think he goes? And I said, he'll go in the first four rounds for sure. Well, he went middle of round two.
I was ready to take Neto at the 2-3 turn, either second round or third round, and was a little bit angry that Neto was taken by Ryan Venancio a few picks before me in the second round. I thought Neto would be available to me at the 2-3, and I was ready to do that. Instead, it was actually interesting. I had two shortstops in mind coming to me at the 2-3 after Zach Neto was taken. Trey Turner went just before been on Zoom for too long, went just before Neto in the second round. I was between CJ Abrams and Mookie Betts, who ended up going way later at the 2-3 turn, ended up going with Abrams. But I was just surprised. Yeah. At the O'Neill Cruz pick, like, I was trying to play kind of the wheel roulette with Weimer and see, you know, I took Manny Machado because I was going back and forth between two shortstops, I was like, oh, I'll let Weimer pick for me and maybe he'd pick one, but he picked O'Neill Cruz. And again, Weimer is winning this league for the second year in a row. He's up on me by like 10, 12 points in this league. I'm in second, but he is, you know, the surprise is that not that O'Neill Cruz went this early. It's what does Steve Weimer see in O'Neill Cruz?
Every time he makes the pick, I'm like,
Exactly.
Yeah, because I loved his stoic attitude throughout a draft. Always makes me laugh because he sits there and goes, well, I guess I need batting average, right? And he just like sits there and says certain things. I was like, okay, what's he doing now? Like, what's he up to? What formula does he have worked on over there that is just going to blow us out of the water for year three in a row?
Yep. That's why were you surprised at Neto? Were you surprised at Neto?
Yes and no. It's kind of a combo. It's like Turner's playing great. Lindor, we'll get to him later because I love him. But Neto legit, like I think Burke's mentioned in the chat, he's got 20-20 again right now. He missed a month of the season. We could be looking at 25-25 right now. Like, if he gets really hot, it can get crazy. He could approach 30-30 when all things are said and done by the end of the season. That's a top two-round pick, man. And it goes to show, like we've talked about it in recent years, the shortstop. We say the position is deep, but you got to get the elite guys. 10 shortstops went in the first 65 picks. That's a very
similar than last again. To last year. Yep. Yep.
And if you go even deeper in that, 2, 4, 6, I think 17 got taken in the first 11 rounds. So shortstop does get dry up quickly in these situations.
And it seemed in this draft tonight, there's a lot of inventory at shortstop. You can say it's a quote unquote deep position, but not if so many go in those first few rounds. You actually still need to go and get your guy at shortstop before it's too late.
Yes, indeed. Pointed out in the chat already that remember when Jackson Merrill was a second round pick? Well, tonight he was an eighth round pick to Jimmy Butler. I was wondering when Jackson Merrill would go. The hype train was real last year. I was completely off that price tag last year. Still not that excited about it now, but it has been a very injury-plagued season. So a healthy season from Jackson Merrill might not be a second-round value still, but much better than eighth round, potentially. So this could be a really good pick for Jimmy Butler here.
I just think you remove the Jackson Merrill name, take that out of the picture. You just got somebody in the eighth round who 4 months ago was pretty much a consensus round 2-3 guy with prospect pedigree at whatever, how old he is, 23 years old. Like if you just kind of take the long view, yes, Merrill's had a bad season, ton of injuries, whatever. You remove that from the equation, just say like, what's the best percentage play over time? Like I thought that was one of the best picks in the draft. I probably should have taken Jackson Merrill, but I already had three outfielders. Could have done it, but that did weigh on me, and I waited on starting pitching, so I had to go elsewhere. But I thought Jimmy Butler getting Jackson Merrill eighth round, like that's the perfect time to take a shot. It's not even taking a shot. Like Jackson Merrill's done it before. It's just can he stay healthy? And if he does, you're getting a second, third round player in the eighth round.
Well, yeah, because like think about the guys you could compare him to that went even two rounds before him. You have Seiya Suzuki. You have Randy Arozarena. You have Wyatt Langford. Some guy named Michael Harris. Like, there's a group of guys that he's on a healthy season equal to or definitely better than. It's a very, very, I think, very good pick for Jimmy.
Yeah, real quick, Michael Harris. I was ready to pull that trigger sixth round. End of the sixth round. Michael Harris was waiting. I put all caps in the chat. Like, here he comes. And Dom took him two picks before me. He called me out, too, before they said I'm sniping Bloomfield there, and he took Harris. And he did snipe me because I was going to take Harris sixth round there.
All right, I skipped one here because this is one that I was mad at myself for not taking. One of the bigger falls in this draft to Mr. John Fish is Ronald Acuna Jr. with the 11th pick in round two. So he went Ellie Ronald out the gate. I love my first two picks, so like I shouldn't be mad, but at the same time, the chance to get Ronald Acuna in round two, that feels pretty nice. I know people might say, well, maybe he won't run. It's still a second round Ronald Acuna. If he hits 45 and steals 15 bases, like I'm cool with that.
Yep. I was so ready. I didn't even expect Acuna to make it back to me in the second, but like at
I just right mentally crossed him out. I'm like, he's a top five pick.
I know. I about him. Exactly. I mentally crossed him out because like there's no way he goes back to the 2-3. I feel like the room missed on Ronald Acuña, and maybe we're valuing Ronald Acuña too much, but I don't like this could be a max pick for Ronald Acuña in draft and holds this year near the end of the second round. So I thought that was a great pick by Mr. John Fish. And to pair that with Ellie De La Cruz, like, good God. That's an interesting 1-2 start for sure.
Yeah, that could be a gift in the makings for Mr. Fish. Some other ones there. Devin Williams went in the 8th round. That one stood out to me like a sore thumb because, yeah, he could get signed somewhere else, be the closer again. We know his stuff's good. Like I was all in on Devin Williams this year. If he lands in the joke in the chat as he goes to Texas Rangers, I'd be all in again. I really would be. So it's just a gamble of a pick. Like he has to go sign somewhere to get the gig type situation.
Yeah, I thought that was a Ryan Venancio pick. I thought that was a fantastic pick, honestly. Like still a 32% strikeout rate for Devin Williams, 18% swing strike. Like I don't think anything is inherently wrong with Devin Williams. You just said yourself, Bubba, you were all in a mere 4 months ago. Relievers are fickle bunches. Like guys can go up and down. I thought this was a great spot in the draft to take a shot. I just feel very confident that wherever Devin Williams signs, it will be as a closer.
I'm with you. I think it was a surprise because it went in front of a bunch of other guys that I think others would have thought would have been the closer pick, if that makes sense. So that was it. Nothing against Devin Williams. Again, I think he's still very good. I still have trouble dropping him right now on my team.
Well,
he got a save tonight. Yeah, he struck out the side.
During the draft.
Bednar blows it, gets the win. Williams gets the save. Oh, it was.
I mentioned this during the Zoom. This happens every year, but like I'm now rooting for these players that I just drafted this season, even though it means absolutely nothing and the stats don't count. Anyway.
All right. One of the newer prospects has been called up recently. These are always the ones like, okay, where are they going to go? We're setting ADP. Let's see how this party starts. Jacob Marcy. He went towards the end of third pick in round 10. Third pick in round 10 to
third to last pick Rob in round 10. Round 10.
I'm an idiot. End of round 10. You're correct. Rob DiPietro. Marcy's hitting .359 with 4 homers, 7 stolen bases, 19 RBIs, and 11 runs scored in 19 games, Ryan. That is bonkers stuff from Jacob Marcy. I believe there's a comment in the stream. This is next year's PCA was the discussion point there. That opens a whole other conversation, potentially. Where are we at on this one? Because I agree. I think Marcy's great. I always have a tough time trying to figure out where do these guys fit.
Agreed. And yeah, Marcy wasn't on my board, but again, it's just the way I construct draft and hold teams. So I don't really know what to think of it. It's obviously a very wide range of outcomes, but you can start to embrace and do that type of thing once you get to the 10th round, in my opinion. So I think we haven't given him proper shout out yet, but Ryan Roof. So this board that we are looking at, this is a Google Sheet creation by Ryan Roof of RotoWire. Ryan pre-builds these stickers and makes it a badge of honor to not miss any potential names, which is such an impossible job because we are drafting 165. I would have missed probably 10 to 20 of these names. I think Jacob Marcy was the first one who didn't have a sticker. So we almost got through the whole draft with Ryan Roof making it with a sticker for everybody. But not only does he have stickers, he's got them color coded and even can change the colors.
He changes the color, which position is even crazier. Yeah.
Like it's
mid draft, James goes, okay, can you change this guy to green now, please? Because I drafted someone else.
I was joking.
In the middle of the draft.
Sedan Rafaela got changed from second base orange to green. It's like, what?
Yeah, it was hilarious. I'm like, God, that's a skill, folks. Skill. But the Marcy pick was one, and There are other ones we'll talk about shortly, but again, this could be 6 rounds too late, or it could be 6 rounds too early. We have no idea, but the skill set's very, very good. And if he is the next PCA, well, PCA was the 5th pick in round 2 this year. So there's those kind of differentials that take place at these early drafts. And Rob knows what he's doing. And the beauty, like you said, in DC format, especially in a standalone, but even in a regular DC, this stands true with this. After round 10, and the fact he's going to probably draft 8 more outfielders like you could keep taking your shots and see what happens. To if Marcy struggles, well, you put a different outfielder in. Like you could kind of play that game as well.
Yep.
The Miz. I honestly was like, wow, because as I was doing my end game stuff, I'm like, wow, we thought the Miz would go a lot earlier. Honestly, maybe it was another walkathon late on Wednesday, kind of got people turned off. But the Miz went, I believe, in the final round. I can't see it on the bottom of the board.
10th round. But... yeah, sorry. Our things.
No, you're good. You're good.
Ugly mugs are covering it. But
yeah, right there, round 10 to Dom.
Yeah, Dom took the Miz in the 10th round. And I believe Rob D took, we can kind of group these guys together, Chase Burns in the 8th round. So Mizorowski went 2 rounds later than Chase Burns. I have no idea what to think about either one. I think we all know the risk reward with taking these types of guys. It was funny, and this happened a couple of times in the Zoom this evening. Before they make their pick, you hear, I'm not sure if this guy's been taken yet, but, and then they say the name, and you're like, who the hell did I miss? And Dom said, Jacob Mizorowski. And it scared the hell out of Rob DiPietro, who was picking next, who took Jacob Marcy. So we just didn't know. He thought we were getting a snipe. I think someone said, did you really mean to take Jacob Marcy? Which was pretty freaking hilarious. So check out, Rob recorded the entire Zoom, and he's going to post that as a podcast. There's some dead air and whatever in between picks, but it's probably a pretty fun listen. We joke with each other quite a bit.
Deadpool Hitter podcast and his Patreon at Deadpool Hitter. So go check out the boy over there doing his thing and having some fun with it, and helps get this rock and roll. Ryan Roof's over at RotoWire. Check out his bullpen stuff. A lot of good people in this chat doing some good work. Before we go to the next one, I'll get a listener comment here. Dr. Doom mentioned Buxton went lower than I thought he might. I was wondering that too, because again, you know, all the sheets of paper I was going through, Buxton kept ranking pretty high on stuff there, and he's having a monster year, but it's also like the first year he's been healthy, Ryan. So to me, it was probably, do we trust this to happen again, or just enjoy what we had and move on?
And we don't know. I remember saying this exact thing about Jazz Chisholm last year. It's like, yeah, he finally stayed healthy for a full season. Do we bank on it again? And yeah, Jazz, you know, whatever, but he ends up going in the second round of this draft. So Byron Buxton, for what it's worth, was a Phil Dessau pick in the 7th round, going right before Sedane Rafaela, right after Chandler Simpson, Christian Yelich, who we assume will get outfield eligibility, and before my Teoscar Hernandez. So that's where Buxton went. Probably, I have no idea what to do with Buxton, but as Dr. Doom says, went lower than I thought he might. I think I agree with that. I think there's always going to be folks who are in on Buxton and take him a couple rounds before that. And that the ADP will probably settle like that, depending how the rest of the season goes for Buxton.
I just want to shout out the Chandler Simpson pick you mentioned there. I was wondering when he would go. So that's a very interesting. If it's Roof's build,
yes, that's what I was. Speed. Yep. Yeah. So Ryan Roof started with Kyle Schwarber and Cal Raleigh, and so like ton of power, especially Raleigh from a position where you know that is an asset, but you have to do something about steals and follow that up with Randy Rosarena and Chandler Simpson. So that's the context behind that Chandler Simpson pick.
All right, let's talk relievers, because this was a discussion point in you and Ben's Patreon preview. Other podcasts that previewed the show, we didn't know how it would go. We kind of talked earlier, do you punt the position because of, you know, what's going on? We kind of hit on a few guys. I mentioned I took McGill. We talked about Devin Williams. But as a whole, they went a little later because it's not a standalone, but still pretty aggressive. Yohan Duran was the first one off the board, then in round 4, then Edwin Diaz and Andres Munoz. Jeff Hoffman was the 4th one off the board, which surprised me a bit, but should have the job still. Hader, we don't know the whole injury situation, but Hader got taken. And then Mason Miller at the 5-6 turn. Trevor McGill, David Bednar round out the first 6 rounds. So what were your thoughts on the reliever position, especially, I guess, rounds 4 through 6, whereas when they started getting taken off the board?
Yeah, which I thought was reasonable. Like, I thought just given the lack of inventory for closers, I thought they might get pushed up a little bit more, but I feel like if you're paying a 4th, 5th, 6th round for your price for your, you know, one of the, at this point in August, one of the 10 or so closers that we project to have a job in 2026, I thought those were reasonable prices. I ended up with Raisel Iglesias in the ninth round. So I waited even longer. We'll see how that pans out. But Randy Rodriguez is another guy who got taken right after Devin Williams. That was in the eighth round. That went to Dom. Randy Rodriguez was there. Robert Suarez went in the eighth round as well. So there's a good number of teams. It's hard to tell because the sticker is the same color as the starting pitchers, but I feel like most teams did end up getting at least one closer. I don't know if anybody did two, but felt like most got one.
Yeah, and top of my head, I didn't see two. Top of my head. So we'll see where that keeps flushing out, because I just kept looking at the available closers. There's only a couple that feel like they still have the job. So it's about to get real interesting. When we pick up the draft in October, it'll be interesting to see where things go. Round 11, as you said, the wildness before the restart began. It was bonkers land out there. A lot of take your shots on some pitchers. Eddie Matthews, I took Hurston Waldrop, Kyle Bradish by James Anderson. Jacob Wilson falling to round 11 kind of surprised me, honestly. I guess the injury has kind of slowed down the Wilson love. What was your takeaway here from round 11, where it felt like it was round 30 of a redraft?
Yeah, felt like people were just taking their shots. Maybe they were taking shots and it started to kick in by the 11th round. But it just felt like this is the last round before we stop. And so folks wanted to just kind of take their shots at that point. So Ryan Helsley, I'll kind of go through, you mentioned some of them, but Ryan Helsley, I'm the only one, of course, boring old Bloomfield, took Luis Castillo.
God. When I heard that come out of your mouth, I'm like, really? Are we doing this right now?
Dude, as an SP3 11th round? Come on.
I get it. You just took the fun out of it. No, I was kidding.
But like, so Castillo aside, it was, Helsley, Addison Barger, Sam Basayo, Ozzie Albies, I guess. I wouldn't even say he's boring, because you never know what you're going to get with Ozzie. Geraldo Perdomo, Zebby Matthews, Lennon Sosa, Jacob Wilson, Ezekiel Tovar, Jack Caglione went in the 11th round to Greg Martin. I can certainly see the reasoning behind that. If Jack Cags comes back and, fingers crossed, does well in September, that could be an ADP value. You took your Hurston Waldrop, Kerry Carpenter, Gavin Williams, Kyle Bradish. So like, the room in the 11th round just felt like this is my last shot before I get to make another pick in October. And so I'm going to kind of shoot for the moon with some of these.
Yeah, no, that's kind of what it feels like, a shoot for your moon. The Cags one could be really interesting if he comes and turns it on in September. A lot of these, like the Lennon Sosa pick, and I love Lennon Sosa. I did not know when he would get drafted. I kept looking at him multiple times. He's got multi-position eligibility. Even going into next year, he might gain first base. Like, he's like a game or two away from first base. So Jake taking him with the 11th round pick, I totally get it. Like it was very much like, okay, that's where he's going to go. I want to see if that's something that sticks going forward. He also took the Law Dog in round 10. So that, I know we're not talking around 10, but the Law Dog fell to round 10. So that was another one where I'm going, there's a lot of in this draft. When you watch, go back and look at the board basically on how things played, but to your round 11 point, it was definitely a go get your guy. Like, I'm curious to Ryan Helsley. Like, I get it. I believe Steve Weimer picked him. He's got a sign somewhere, obviously. Definitely could. Definitely should. So we'll have to see how that plays out. It feels like this last offseason we had, top of my head, five or six guys that needed to sign somewhere. And we're might be in the same, if not more, guys this offseason to go get some closing jobs. So we'll see where that takes place.
Yeah, I think Robert Swore. I mean, he's the MLB saves leader. I would think he signs as a closer somewhere. So I like that pick in the whatever eighth round. Dr. Doom says, did Andrew Vaughn get picked? Andrew Vaughn did not get picked in this one.
A lot of question marks with that one still. Like, enjoy it while you can, but
a lot of questions. Go ahead. Sorry. My bad.
No, I was gonna say a lot of questions with that one. What were you gonna say?
Going back to the Lennon Sosa pick, the multi-position eligibility is pretty big, obviously, in draft and holds, but it not only is it multi-position, but it's first and second base, so you get that corner middle. But also by my, and again, on the Patreon, we did a bonus episode where I actually went through my draft sheet. By my draft sheet, like the top 70 hitters, only looks like six of them are multi-position eligible. So that's a pretty rare, maybe seven. That's a pretty rare thing. And it was similar case last season. There were not many multi-position guys, at least entering the season. Bunch of in-season eligibility gets picked up, but Lennon Sosa was one of the few multi-position eligible guys that was taken.
Yeah, no, that checks out with as good as he has been. So I like the pick. I just didn't know when he would go because, like I said, I kept looking at him. I had him circled on my list. I guess not. He's having a really good season. It's kind of been more of a good second half. He's the 112th hitter on the play radar for the season, but man, he's having a good run of it. To say he's hitting cleanup to a very good White Sox team, so a very good White Sox offense, not team, I should say. So let's see where that one continues to go as we go forward. All right, let's go to the part of the show I think everyone's looking forward to, Ryan. Let's dissect
the interview.
Yes, yeah. Let's dissect our teams, Ryan.
What the hell were you thinking with? Yeah,
since you picked second. Let's start with you.
Okay.
Well, because you picked before I did, so we'll start at the top here. You went Judge back-to-back seasons. You got Machado, Abrams, Duran. I'm just gonna. I'll let you talk. What were your thoughts on these first four picks before I ask you questions?
The typical Bloomfield stuff. Veteran, multiple seasons of a track record, category balance. Yeah, and hitters. Like I was pretty confident as I was talking with Ben, like it was not going to take a pitcher at the 2-3 unless somebody totally fell. So obviously with Judge, I'm not going to reinforce all my picks, but just wanted to get track record, wanted to get age, and wanted to get category balance. And I feel like I accomplished that with the first four.
The first three were Bloom picks one, like through and through. I will be honest, Jaron Duran surprised me because that doesn't seem like a guy we talk about a lot in Bloomfield's orbit. He was a higher pick last year, so I guess you're quote unquote getting a discount here. Still having a good season. What were your thoughts behind the Jaron Duran pick? Not knocking it, it's just not a normal Bloomfield pick.
Right, and this is, I guess it's, yeah, with Duran, it is only one season of that track record as opposed to some of these other guys where almost all these other guys, it's been multiple seasons of that track record. To me, it's just this was I will full disclosure, Jaron Duran was my biggest second round fade entering the season this year. I think he was yours too, but a fade in 1 year can be a buy the next year if the price is right, and I just think with Duran, like not much has changed in terms of the raw power, the speed, the lineup position, the team. Like I just don't think that much has actually changed for Jaron Duran. And I think the plate appearances are going to pile up. And this is, again, just somebody at prime age who a mere 4 months ago was a consensus second round pick who hasn't had a terrible season, hasn't been a great season, but I just feel like this is kind of that ultimate regression type move where you're buying someone coming off maybe a career low season.
Yep, that's totally fine. I agree with all of that. Just wanted to hear what you had to say on that regard. Round five, you took your first pitcher, George Kirby, who is not having a Kirby-like season. And again, one of your guys, a guy you've loved forever, but we're got injuries have derailed things. Maybe that's why he's not having a Kirby-like season. Still has the 1.18 whip, which is good. Not Kirby-like, but very good in my world. So are you looking for a bounce back from George Kirby? I guess it's a gift in round five, or is this his best available starting pitcher?
I was pretty stoked with this one. I think Kirby's year-to-date stats are weighed down by his first three outings of the season when he was, I don't think, fully ready to come back from injury. And George Kirby after that has honestly been George Kirby. He's had a few three-walk games, which is a little bit unsettling, but I think this is the same guy that we've always had and pretty consistently been like a third round pick, and so happy to get Kirby in the fourth.
Yep, I could get that for sure. We mentioned the Will Smith pick already. Again, that's Bloomfield 101. Teoscar is your boy, but you got a nice little gift there in round, that's 8 round 8. Shota Imanaga. I know I pronounce it wrong every time. Sorry, people. Get used to it. Shota was a guy that I looked at a couple times, and I kept passing on for different reasons. But I think that's a heck of a second pitcher for you.
I was nervous for this one because, yeah, through, and this was part of the plan, but through seven rounds, I had one pitcher, and I was like that can work. I want to get a stout SP2. Imanaga was at near the top of my board behind Evaldi, which we'll get to, but yeah, I was stoked that he fell back down to eight. I think that's a great buy. Notice on the draft board there is a question mark next to CHC. I guess Shota has an opt out, which he will probably exercise unless something drastically changes the last whatever 6 weeks of the season. But yeah, played a little bit of roulette by waiting on starting pitcher and even waiting further to get my SP2. But I think Shota as an SP2 in the eighth round was fine.
Then he went Raisel Iglesias, as you mentioned, as your first closer in round nine. Dansby Swanson, solid middle infielder, guy we talked about all 2025 draft season as a middle infield choice. And then he wrapped it up with your SP3, Luis Castillo, if he's still pitching in baseball next season. Just kidding. So what's your thoughts overall on how this broke down? Is you got three outfielders, three starting pitchers, two shortstops, and a third baseman to go with your catcher and closer.
Yeah, so I was actually looking this up during the draft because I hadn't really paid much attention to Raisel Iglesias. We all know about the rough patch, but Raisel Iglesias has more saves in the second half already than he had in the first half. He has been in 22 second half games. He's got a 0.59 whip,
yep,
a 2 ERA, an 18% swinging strike. Like, Raisel Iglesias has quietly been elite in the second half. I know it's a tiny sample, but like, I just think it means that somebody's going to sign Raisel Iglesias as their closer next season because, yes, there was a rough patch there, similar to what I was just talking about with Devin Williams a few minutes ago. Like, these ebbs and flows can happen at reliever. I thought Iglesias in the ninth was good. We'll see. I mean, if he doesn't sign as a closer, then sure. I mean, he is 35 years old, so there's some risk there. But I when I looked at those second half numbers for Iglesias, I was like, holy hell.
Michael C. in the chat says, who would you have taken if Shota wasn't there? Because it's weird. Quick.
Yes. It got weird very quick. I was holding out hope that... So Shota was one. You took Nate Evaldi before Shota, which I did not like. Nick Pivetta went before Shota, which I did not like. Phil DeSoto took Nick Lodolo before in the same round as Imanaga, which I did not like. I do not know what I would have done without Shota. And that was kind of the problem. The next two pitchers, the next two starters... Gray. Yeah, Sonny Gray. So Weimer took Sonny Gray. That's probably would have been my plan B.
That would have been perfect. Yes.
Yeah. And maybe Gray's better than Shota. I don't know. I just, for some reason, Sonny Gray injury risk enters my mind, and I have no idea why. That's a complete bias on my part. But Sonny Gray, and I was also considering Jesus Luzardo, who did end up going to Phil in the ninth round. So I probably would have pivoted to Sonny Gray or Luzardo, but I was pretty dead set on Shota.
Yeah, the thing that kept me off of Shota, and I love the pitcher that is Shota Imanaga, is he has been, you know, the hamstring injury is one thing, but the K rate's down 4% this year. Everything else is still very good. I'm just kind of like wondering, is it the increased workload last year catching up with him this year? There's a lot of questions, but I still think he's a very, very good pitcher, to say the least. Before we get to, or anything else on your team before we go to my team?
No, I'm good.
Okay, I want to mention this real quick. Spore in the chat says, do you have the data to do a retrospective on how well buying the dip went this year? Are you drafting the biggest followers from early 2024? I do not, of course, because that doesn't come in my sheets I print out on the internet. But that maybe could be something we look into in the offseason for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I typically do some kind of how did last year's biggest followers in ADP turn out? But no, I haven't run it yet, but that will be something to – certainly we will talk about this offseason. Yeah.
Might be something good for a project in the offseason that we might work good. Whatever. All right. Let's talk about my team. You get to grill me now, Ryan.
All right. First off, you've only got one outfielder. I'm not going to go pick by pick yet. You did not take an outfielder at all until the ninth round. You took Brenton Doyle. How do you feel about that through 11 picks?
I'm fine. I'm not great about it, but I'm fine. Every time I look at an outfielder, someone would take them, or it turned into a group that they're all the same type situation. So I didn't want to force my hand. And I just looked at, I kept telling myself, just look at, you're building a roster of stats, not just positions, but then in a DC, you still need a handful of outfielders. So I kept trying, I kept battling that in my head. Like, okay, I know I need like 8 to 10 outfielders here, but you know, I'm passing up on guys that are going to really help my team more than that outfielder is going to, if that makes sense. So that was my conundrum. And the problem is, like, I probably should have been more aggressive, but like, I wanted Christian Yelich. I for 3 rounds, I kept ignoring him. And he finally gets taken when I'm getting ready to think about taking him. And the other thing for me is usually I would have more outfielders. I was way more aggressive on pitching tonight than I usually am. So
you were
changed it. That changed it up too.
You were more aggressive on pitching, but also you, I think you kind of needed to be, because even though you did wait until the fourth round to take Zach Wheeler, like, I feel like that's a wild card pick. That could be nothing, but that could also be the Zach Wheeler. Hopefully, fingers crossed, this is the Zach Wheeler that we know comes back in 2026. But I think you were right to continue to pound pitching, because if that Wheeler pick does not work out and you only took like one more starting pitcher, one or two more starting pitchers, you're very much hoping on Zach Wheeler holding it all together. And we all hope that happens, but that makes sense. That line of reasoning makes sense. I mean, I will also add to answer for you as well. It's a 15 team league. You're going to have a hole somewhere. Every team's going to have a hole. It's just how comfortable are you patching that hole? I don't know what the outfield pool will look like once we're starting to fill out outfield 4, outfield 5. But you do have like the top outfielders on my sheet that are still available. You could take in the next round: Taylor Ward, Brandon Nimmo, Springer, Trout, Joe Adele. Like you do have Willy Abreu. Like that, those are just some names that are still hanging out there that you could patch up outfield, I think, pretty quick and be okay there.
Ward and Springer were two options I almost took with my last pick. Like I had them circled for a while on my final rounds, basically. But then I kept looking at the pitching, and I said at the beginning of the show, pitching gets worse and worse. And to your point with the Wheeler comment, if for some reason Wheeler's not there, I need these guys. And the pitchers I took, which we're going to talk about, they're not the bill of health either. So I needed to kind of accumulate type situation.
All right. So now we'll go back up to the top. You made some waves. You got some oohs and ahs in the Zoom with your junior Caminero pick. Defend that one.
Well, third base sucks. That's been established for years now. Junior Caminero, you know, batting average could be better. Would love to see a better. It's 255 right now. As long as he stays around 255 or better, we can survive. Dude's going to hit over 40 home runs. He's going to drive in. Let me get the exact numbers before I completely speak out of turns, but right now he has 85 RBIs. He's going to have over 100 RBIs. He could close it on 90-plus runs. He's going to hit 40-plus home runs. And to top it off, he's 22 years old. He turned 22 in July. We might not have even seen the best of Junior Caminero. We haven't, I would like to say, seen the best of Junior Caminero yet. It'd be nice if he stole more. He's only got 5 bags. But it's like we talked about with some other guys earlier. If he drops 40 bombs, drives in 100-plus runs, scores 90-plus, you can work with 5 to 10 stolen bases every day of the week. So I wanted to lock it in that beast at third base because it just gets ugly in my mind. And trust me, I was weighing some other options. Like when Churio got taken, J-Rod got taken, because those are two guys I was hoping would fall to 12. Caminero kind of slid into where I wanted to go.
Yeah, and I remember Ben, I don't mind the pick at all. I remember Ben asking me on the bonus episode earlier this week, because like would he asked me would I take Caminero at the 2-3 turn, and emphatically I was like, hell yeah, I would absolutely do that. And it's also just funny because so your second round pick was Francisco Lindor. Like if you just flipped these and took Lindor in the first round and Caminero in the second round, like
no one says a word.
No one would even No one would even bat an eye. That's kind of the interesting thing about some of these drafts, especially when we're going completely blind. I was surprised Lindor made it.
Me
back
too.
To you, I thought you were going to take him in the first round.
Was puckered for 6 picks because in our side chat, I'm like, I was going between Caminero and Lindor, and I made the pick. I'm like, I should have went Lindor. Should have got my 30-30. Just moved on. Didn't do it. Went with the splash, and then it fell back to me. Thank goodness.
Yep, I remember texting you saying I'm surprised you didn't go Tucker or Lindor, and yeah, Kyle Tucker went to Jenny Butler right before you. We did not know this hairline fracture report. I still haven't even read it. Whatever, I guess he's had a hairline fracture in his hand since June or something. Yep. We've been a little bit detached, or at least I have. I can't multitask like you can. Would you, if Tucker was available, to you in the second round, or do you have gone there? I think you said, thank you, Jenny, for saving me from myself in the Zoom. So I guess not.
I was going Lindor the whole time, but it was one of those, like, if she takes Lindor, then yes, I'm taking Kyle Tucker. That was just kind of the snare that took place. And I love Kyle Tucker. I think everyone knows I love Kyle Tucker. I should probably take steps back, but I can't do anything if he's hurt. Because when healthy, like before the fracture, dude was putting up another monster season. So it's like he does everything he's supposed to do when healthy, but the when healthy has been the question for two straight years now.
Yeah. Somewhat the quick side, I don't know, tangent, but Jenny Butler's team is pretty fascinating to me. So she did take Kyle Tucker, like I said, right before you, paired that with potentially elite pitching staff, took Paul Skeens first and Strider and Cole Reagans in the sixth and seventh rounds. Mm-hmm. If that works out, could be great. And then Johan.
Best picks, but nice.
Yeah. And Johan Duran in the fourth round as well. So Joe Rico chimes in, says Jenny has an amazing team. Yeah, I thought she built a really good squad there. But back to your squad of scrubs. Third round, catcher man, you went on brand. You took William Contreras. Again, this was more than a full round after Cal Raleigh, which I think is probably right. I guess you're just banking on this being a lost season for William Contreras because of his broken hand or whatever, hand injury.
Broken. Yeah, he's got the fracture in his hand. But let's just be fair. I want to, before we say it's a lost season, dude's hitting almost 260 now with 13 home runs, six steals. Like the second half has been much more King William, as we like to say. He's hitting 303 in the second half with seven home runs and only one steal, but 24 RBIs and 22. Runs scored in 30 games. He's looking much more like the King William of old. And I kind of, two things, I think he'll bounce back, not injured, but the catcher injuries will happen all the time. So that's just part of the game. But I also kind of wanted to take my pick there, A, to get him, and B, to kind of selfishly put him back as the number two catcher in fantasy baseball behind Cal Raleigh. make sure that happened, basically.
Bubba's moving ADP, as he probably should for catchers. I don't know about the other positions, but
no, we'll stick to catchers.
I'm kidding. All right, so then you went Zach Wheeler with your first pitcher. We talked about that. You went Vinny P with your fifth, which we kind of talked about, but did you want to expand a little more about Vinny P?
There's some things with Vinny P that I like a lot. Like, I was very interested in Vinny P this year. I want to say he was going like around 10, 11, 12, something like that. This draft season, we talked about him a lot. Like, okay, the dude hit 262 last year, 97 ribbies, 19 homers, 131 games. He got hurt at the end, back-to-back years of the shoulders. It's a concern. But this year, he's healthy. He's played 124 games. He's hitting 259 again. So it's been that steady, similar batting average that we like. The plate discipline's been the same. The 24 home runs, probably getting close to 100 ribbies again. He's just, to me, it's like, it's consistent. Barring an injury, this is who he is. And for a depleted first base position, it feels like it drops off for me quite a bit after this, that I really wanted to make sure Vinny P, like, I had circled, like, I want one of the guys in his range. Matt Olson's always a coin toss. Josh Naylor, I like. Where's he going to be next year? I wanted Vinny P badly, and I'm a big fan of how that turned out.
And to your point, after Vinny P, a round later, Wilson Contreras went. Two rounds later, Tyler Soderstrom went. And then I don't see any other first baseman until
Yandy Diaz, Jonathan Aranda.
Until Yandy Diaz, Jonathan Aranda, Torque in the 10th round. So that kind of, you may have, we don't know where these cliffs are at certain positions this early for next year, but you may have taken that first base cliff right before it.
Well, and when we need probably at least three first basemen, like, you wanted, to me, I wanted to be before that cliff with at least one of them.
Yeah. Yep. So, and I am down in the cliff without a first baseman. So
it's okay. You got
Trevor McGill in the sixth round. I thought that was fine. Just kind of get your closer. That works. Nate Eovaldi. We all know how Nate Eovaldi, how I feel about Nasty Nate. I thought you needed to prioritize again with Wheeler as your SP1. You need to still prioritize an SPT, and you did that. The Michael Garcia pick. I thought the Michael Garcia pick, this is when someone rang your doorbell trying to sell you stuff.
Yeah,
and it was just total chaos in your
household. I live in a rural neighborhood. No one ever rings my doorbell. Like, it maybe happens four or five times a year max. Yeah,
so I like the pick. I think you needed, well, no, I wouldn't say you needed steals. You didn't need steals that bad. I just think Michael Garcia, the average in steals is good. The only thing I'll say with Michael Garcia is, you did, pun intended, corner
yes
yourself at corner infield because now you have Caminero, Vinny P, and now Michael Garcia at corner infield. That's fine. And Michael Garcia could very well probably will pick up second base eligibility at some point next season, or hell, even by the end of this season. So just something to, note I made there, but I thought it was a fine pick.
Part of what I liked with this is, to your point, it'll be third base come draft day, but he's played 12 games at shortstop this year, 11 games at second. So in season, he's second, short, and third. So when it comes to a DC, not saying this is going to happen, but if that were to happen again next year, he becomes even more valuable to what I'm looking to do. And I'm a big fan of that. I love the batting average he brings to the table because, you know, I mentioned the Caminero average. That could be a little suspect. I like, you like Lindor, you like Vinny P, but Mikel really, really bounces out that average. And if he could ever get back to leading off on that team, like, that could take it to a whole other level.
And then your first outfielder, round nine, I mentioned earlier, playing the regression card with Brenton Doyle, who you took in this draft last season. I remember I called him this year's Nolan Jones, which I don't know. But I thought, the ninth round, you went Brenton Doyle to get that first outfielder. Kyle Stowers went right after that. I think you said you were back and forth between those two.
It was between those two. When I took Doyle, I was like, okay, if he falls to me in round 10, I'll take him. I want like that Doyle Stowers would give me two outfielders. I love the combo. Obviously did not happen, but I was going between the two. I just think Doyle, we know all the trials and tribulations he went through in his personal life in the first half, and we're seeing him in the second half hitting .380 with five homers already in the second half. Like, he looks a lot more like the Brenton Doyle of old. We kept saying the skills are there, production hasn't been there, while the production's catching up to him. I'm buying into a much better result in 2026.
Makes sense. And then you rounded out with two more starting pitchers, which, again, as I talked about earlier, I think you needed to volume some starting pitchers on your way out. So Ryan Pepiot and Hurston Waldrop, which was not on my radar at all. I, of course, prefer Luis Castillo, but thought you needed to close it out with two more pitchers and or at least one pitcher and one outfielder. You could have gone different ways with that, but you now leave with five of your 11 picks being pitchers, which I think you needed to do.
Yeah, no, I'm happy with it. And one thing I did is I got guys that all four of my starting pitchers strike a ton of dudes out. Ratios are very, very good. Now, Waldrop's a small sample, but so far, so good. But Pepiot's ratios, Eovaldi, Wheeler, like, at least it's setting a base for me. Hopefully they don't get hurt. Hopefully Wheeler comes back. It could be a nice start for me. Much different than my usual drafts, let's put it that way.
Yeah, usually you just punt pitching.
Yeah, cause even Rob on the chat's like, look at that whip, Bubba. Look at you. I'm like, yeah, way different than usual. Don't get used to it.
Yeah.
All right.
I think that's it, man.
Yeah. Anything else that stands out to you that you want to discuss? I'm pretty good, all things considered. It's still a lot to soak in, but it's good to keep looking at the different picks, where they went, so on and so forth.
Yeah, we did have a little discussion at the end. We call this the Jeff Zimmerman Award. Zimmerman always tweets out, or I guess now Blue Skies out, the year-to-date, that the players who were not picked that have been the most valuable year-to-date. And this season, it looks like some combination of Trevor Story, Matthew Boyd, and somebody else.
I'll tell you right now, on the Fangraphs Player Rater, the first player is available, George Springer, Matthew Boyd. They're 41 and 42 this season on the player rater. And then Taylor Ward, Trevor Story after that.
Okay.
Andrew Abbott would be the next pitcher after Matthew Boyd.
I think we did pretty good as a league. Like, yeah. I don't think anyone really slipped. Like, we could debate those names or whatever what that order is, but I feel like no one really stands out as someone that just completely slipped through the cracks. So we did not. Dr. Doom in the chat says, did you all talk about Yordan Alvarez? We did not. Yordan Alvarez went in the
fourth round
to Ryan Venancio, paired it with, he started Corbin Carroll, Neto, Yamamoto, and then went Yordan Alvarez in the fourth round. Yordan Alvarez is UT only as of now for 2026 as well. So obviously we know what Yordan Alvarez can do. That could be an absolute banger of a pick in the fourth round.
Yeah,
obvious risk as well.
Yeah, but at least it's not the usual for 1-2 turn risk that Yordan's been in years past. So
yep.
You got that going for you as well. All right.
A couple other names in the chat real quick. Just Stephen Kwan did not get picked. Someone asked about that. Michael Bush did not get picked. That could be an option for me at first base, potentially.
Could be. We'll see. Could be. So could Andrew Vaughn.
Yeah, I don't know. I need to see it a little longer. I'm never an Andrew Vaughn guy. So
look at Michael Tuglia.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Or Warming Burnenthal.
All right. We need to end this.
I had to have some fun with you there. We'll wrap it up there. It's great. Great getting our feet wet in the draft world, but we'll be back tomorrow night to preview the week 23 Fab, because we still have five more weeks to go in the fantasy baseball season for 2025. So make sure you check us out. Make sure you check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the Patreon, patreon.com/BubbaBloom, on Twitter at BubbaBloomPod. I'm at BD Intrick. This was Bubba and the Bloom episode 269. Catch y'all next time.